The Virginia Voice presents What's Your Story? Our program is based on the idea that everybody has a story to tell. All you have to do is ask. Now, here's the host of What's Your Story, Don Dale.
My guest this time on What's Your Story is Brad Kuttner, who is the editor of GayRVA.com and RVAMag.com, both of which we'll explain in a moment. But, Brad, we start our program with a question that almost always prompts a conversation. What is your earliest childhood memory?
Hi.
it's a toughie.
Wow. Eating a plate full of bacon at the Snowman Breakfast in Nordstrom's, probably.
Wait a minute.
I mean, it's Nordstrom up in Northern Virginia and Tyson's, they used to have the Snowman Breakfast, which was like a Christmas, like a holiday thing, and my folks would always take me, and there was a buffet, and I was a fat kid, and I just remember getting a whole plate of bacon. That's a really silly first thing to remember, but that's the first thing that pops in my head.
How old were you?
Under 10, hopefully.
Yeah.
It was early. That's, I don't know.
Well, see, it gets a start in a conversation because clearly you're from Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
So Centerville, so about 20 minutes west of D.C., pretty much where 28 and 29 intersect. As I said, Manassas is what people know. We're real close to Manassas. There's mostly military families. My dad was a pharmacist and my mom was an interior designer, but a lot of my neighbors were military. I don't know. So it was kind of a military suburb. A lot of friends and neighbors were, you know, worked at the Pentagon or worked at bases around town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was
big town, little town.
It's funny to see how much it's changed as a suburb. It's really weird. You look in other states and how they've handled suburbs compared to DC, because DC is super unique in that. I spent some time out west, and you go to Provo or to Salt Lake City, which encompasses Provo or something, and it's just this endless stream of the same house for 90 miles. And it's funny because D.C. is surprisingly compact comparatively. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's spotty, and I mean, like, downtown Centerville, there's no real, like, downtown place there. It essentially was a suburb for people to work in D.C. or Tyson, or, when it first started, probably not so much Tyson's. It's the town up north, Leesburg, around that area. I mean, it's changed so dramatically in the last 15 years that it's not even what it was. I mean, I remember farm pasture where there are now 8 4-lane boulevards. So it was never that big, and still, you know, it's still got like quaint corners. If you go into Clifton, which is, you know, 3 miles away, it's, you know, a town frozen in time. At the same time, you go 6 miles away and you get on 66 and you get, it's very much a DC suburb. So it's just kind of funny to see how it grew like that.
Was it a good place to grow up?
Yeah. I mean, I walked to school and, you know, and my high school was walking distance, and I went to a private middle school, but yeah, it was great. My parents were awesome, and it was fun. It wasn't terrible. it was a lot of folks who grew up in suburbs, I'm sure, could relate to the kind of frozen culturally location. There wasn't a lot going on, but it was more than, you know, like rural Virginia. Yeah. We were close enough to D.C. And, I mean, it was a pretty high income area, so there was stuff going on.
You went to school there?
Yeah, to Union Mill, which was right in my neighborhood, and then Centerville High School, and yeah.
And then to college?
Then to community college, then dropping out and temping for a year, which gave me some really great insight into what I actually wanted to do with my life. This was pre-2008, pre-recession, so everybody had jobs, and I was temping. I was making like between $12 and $15 an hour, and living with my parents and working 40 hours a week at a temping agency. And I worked for Satellite Distribution Company. I worked for Heckler Koch, the American headquarters for the gun makers. Mm-hmm. I answered their phones for a couple weeks, which was hilarious because the first day I walked in, and you know, they have like a button gate, and I walked in and they said, "All right, Brad, go ahead and have a seat. This is your speech for when you answer the phone. you're going to buzz people in when they enter. But if you ever see anyone barrel through the gate, like just drive through, heading towards the front, just get under your desk and press this button. Because, I mean, it was like cops who would buy guns from Heckler Koch would send their guns back to get repaired there. It was essentially a military depot of high-grade weaponry. And it was fun. I actually, one day, I kept asking, because they'd get the guns into repair and they have to test fire them before they send them back. So one day, every day, I'd be like, hey, when can I test fire guns? When can I test fire guns? And finally, they come on back, Brad. And I walk in and they've got like a fully automatic MP5, like a SWAT team issue. Like, civilians are not supposed to have this gun. And they just let me fire it off. So I'm in like a suit and tie, like Reservoir Dogs. Just, it was a lot of fun. It was good because I learned all you needed in life was a college degree and you could get whatever job you really wanted, or at least a decent job, again, pre-2008. And so I was like, screw this, I'm going back to college. I met somebody and they were down in Richmond, and so I applied to VCU. I went back to community college and did well enough, and applied to VCU and got in. And before I knew it, I was in Richmond. And well, that was 9 years ago.
You're 29 now. Mm-hmm. What did you do after VCU? What came between VCU and...
VCU was long. I was at VCU for a long time. I was on the 7-year plan, plus the years in community college. I mean, I worked a lot. I did a lot of... I did radio for a while, which is a lot of fun, which is why I'm particularly pleased to be a part of this.
What kind of radio?
So it was a WRAR, so I did mostly... I got in, started volunteering with them because I liked the music. I liked the weird music they played. They had a noise show. They still do have a noise show Wednesday nights. Like noise music, if that's a thing that I can... That makes sense. Like,
it doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Look up, like, Merzbow. There's actually a really good noise scene. It's, like, really aggressive, kind of electronic-sounding stuff.
Huh.
And it's weird, but it's... I actually just watched Scanners. You remember the Cronenberg movie Scanners?
No. I remember it, but I didn't see it.
Well, if you listen to the soundtrack of Scanners, that's essentially noise music. But I got into it because of that, and then I ended up interning with them on the news talk side, because they do news and talk during the day, and just got a chance to do a lot of radio production and a lot of engineering. And I started an actual news show with another girl who was around my age. She was post-grad and living in Richmond. She had gone to NYU for journalism. Her name's Caroline Jackson. She's fantastic. She's out in Arizona now. But she and I did this radio show for a while. It was a lot of just us not knowing what we were doing, figuring stuff out, which was good because we wrote a lot and we recorded a lot and I did a lot of video work. And again, you know, there was very little supervision. As long as we didn't cuss or get anybody in any trouble, we pretty much could do whatever we wanted. And that led to a weekly show called Open Source, which they relaunched within the last couple months, maybe within the last year. And we started it with a guy who used to work at the Wall Street Journal, and we were doing an hour a week live. And then from there, I ended up getting a gig at WLEE AM 990, which you'll probably remember. And I worked as a producer on the Jack Gravely show. And I did...
Interesting man.
Yeah. No, Jack was like, get off my lawn radio. It was a lot of fun. And then I worked as a board operator. So I did, you know, traffic and weather and stuff. But it was fun to work at a radio station that was only like semi-corporate. It wasn't, you know, super high.
So you got to experiment. You got to try everything.
Yeah, I got to do a lot of different stuff, which again, you know, if I had been in another town, I probably wouldn't have the chance to do. Mm. And it gave me the chance to see behind the scenes on a lot of different media options. I freelanced a lot, especially during the WRAR stuff. There's a show, Free Speech Radio News, on Pacifica that's like a little left of Al Jazeera. And I did a lot of freelance work for them for a while. And it used to just be me on my bike riding around town with my high-quality recorder. It was a lot of fun. It was a blast. It wasn't making any money, but it was a lot of fun.
Well, that's part of the secret, isn't it, that you weren't working for corporate radio?
Yeah.
That you didn't have somebody saying every minute that you do something has to bring in profit.
Yeah, that helped.
And so you got to play.
Yeah.
And that's the best form of education.
Yeah.
That's the way I learned radio and television.
Yeah. No, I was real fortunate to be able to have the freedom that I did, and real fortunate to have parents who were supportive through it. That was super key.
So how did Gay RVA and RVAMag.com come into your life?
I was still at WLEE, and I was like, I need to get a real job. I need to get a real job. And couldn't find radio work. This is all fast forward, 2 years ago, so 2011, 2012.
The times are tough.
Yeah, especially for radio. So I remember the thing that really broke this. I got flown up for some second interviews. I had some really great second interviews and stuff like that all around. But the thing that really broke me was when I applied for an entry-level position out for Radio IQ out at WVTF in Blacksburg, mm-hmm. and entry-level, $24,000 a year benefits, living in Blacksburg, not a celebrity job by any means. And I had a letter of rec from somebody who used to work there, and I had all these, I've been working in Richmond radio for 7 years and all this, and I applied. Never heard anything, called a month later and said, hey, I applied. Have you guys picked anybody for this position? And they said, yeah, we actually have. And I was like, oh, okay, I understand. What were their qualifications? What do I have to do in order to be hired mm-hmm. by you in the future? And she said, well, they worked at Chicago Public Media for 15 years. And like went through this hilarious resume that was absolutely unattainable by me. And that's when I was like, okay, I need to go ahead and forget this dream. So I ended up getting a gig with an activism job, doing some organizing tier of ladder of activism, second and third tier stuff, where there was one team of people going out and collecting signatures on comment cards, and then we'd call all the people who signed the comment cards and try and get them to show up for events, and it was an absolute sham, and I lasted about a month and a half and then said, I can't do this anymore. The hours and expectations they had versus what actually happened. The thing that broke the camel's back was we had 130 people say they were going to show up to an event, and 4 showed up, and 3 of them were my friends. So I was like, I can't handle the disappointment here. And they did not give us much freedom there. It was very much by the numbers. And what they were doing was testing activism theories. So essentially, if it didn't work, it wasn't a big deal, but you just have to deal with this crushing failure. So I was like, I don't need this in my life. Spent a month unemployed. Got it. Watched all of Lost, the ABC
TV
show.
Yes. You need to be unemployed for a month.
Yeah. it was a dark month. And then got a job delivering pizzas and just kind of picking stuff up. And then I had done a lot of live music videos, reporting bands live. And I reached out to RVA Mag and said, hey, let's meet. I'd like to start doing video for you guys because I got nothing else going on. And started talking to the other editor there, Andrew Nietzsche, and we were having coffee at Lamplighter, and he's like, yeah, and we're about to buy Gay RVA, and we need an editor, and they don't necessarily have to be gay, but we'd like them to be gay. And I was like, that's me, I'm your guy. And within 2 months, they brought me on board, and within a month of taking over Gay RVA, a story broke about a women's volleyball coach at VCU who was fired, had claimed he was fired for being gay. In the state of Virginia, that's totally legal. Right. So you can't necessarily say you were fired for being gay as if it's something wrong. Right. So VCU's own internal investigation said that he was not fired for being gay.
Oh, well.
So that was very official. A member of the girls' volleyball team, the new athletic director came in, and that's when the only two negative employment decisions made when the new athletic director came in were two openly gay employees. One was him getting fired, and the other was a 30-year veteran who was demoted. He walked into the girls' volleyball team and told them he wanted somebody who, I can't remember the exact language, but it was presented differently or presented a different image for the team, something like that. So that story blew up, was on ESPN, and that's when...
Did you break the story?
Yeah, we broke it. And it was great. It was, within a month of me taking over. So I was like, oh my God! And That's when the folks at LGBTQ Nation, which is like a gay AP wire, reached out to me and said they wanted to bring me on board. And so we work with them, and it's made everything a million times easier. It's given us kind of a nice backbone to fall on. If I'm ever in trouble, I can call the editor there, and he throws his million plus social media contacts around, and usually it helps, and just given us a stronger voice. And I had a lot of success on Gay RVA, and before long, the success transferred over to RVA Mag, and so then they were like, all right, here, just do both. And so I've been doing both for about a year-ish.
Do you have any idea how many folks you reach in a given week?
In a week?
Or a month, or whatever?
Between the two sites, I think I can say over 100,000 people view the site a month between the two sites. We're on track to do more than that total, but that's a good low estimate, is about 150,000 views between the two sites. I mean, RVA Mag's been around a long time. Their social media is very genuine, if that makes sense. People on Facebook and Twitter liked and followed RVA Mag because they were interested in the content, whereas, you know, some of the larger media outfits in town, it's kind of a default. Of course you're going to like the local NBC affiliate. Of course you're going to like the local CBS affiliate. And they all, you know, kind of play catch up with one another, covering a lot of the same things and slightly different angle on the same story. And I like to think that we hit a lot of the stories that they don't cover. So it's been great because we get to kind of fill that void and get to be kind of the alternative media compared to something like Style Weekly.
So let me focus on Gay RVA for a moment. There's never been in Richmond, to my knowledge, other than a couple of weekly newspapers that were pretty bad, that covered anything to do with being gay in Richmond. And obviously there's no deep history of gay publications in Richmond.
Yeah.
But Gay RVA seems to be much more prominent and much more of use as a resource to the gay community in Richmond. That's a really good thing. I would think you'd be very proud of that.
I appreciate that. Unfortunately, on the internet, you usually don't get a lot of compliments, but you do get a lot of insults.
Yes,
so I am always incredibly grateful whenever anyone says that they've even read something on the site, because, again, I usually only hear the bad stuff. You know, it was started by Kevin Clay in 2009, and Kevin built an amazing foundation and united a lot of people under it and created a great brand and a great URL and a great resource for LGBTQ folks in Richmond. When the folks at RVA Mag bought it from Kevin and then they handed the keys to me, I took my journalism experience and background and applied it in the same format. And I was very lucky because these issues are very prominent, very accessible these days. Had I taken over Gay RVA 10 years ago, I mean, I guess there'd be a broader conversation about the impact of the internet back then, but, you know, now was the time to address these issues. And I think my bosses deserve a lot of credit for that, Tony Harris and John Reinhold. They bought the site, and whether or not they knew that it was going to be such a hot topic and something that so many people wanted to connect with, you know, that's what they ended up with. And it's hard because as someone who hopes to be a traditional journalist, and I'm sure as a gay person who's done this, you know, you end up facing the question, you know, am I a gay journalist or am I a journalist who happens to be gay? And because I'm doing specifically gay news, it's a lot easier to say that I'm a gay journalist. And the activist in me is kind of like, that's not a bad thing. I should be proud to be both gay and a journalist. So, yeah, I'm a gay journalist. But at the same time, you know, professionally, I would like to be known as a journalist who happens to be gay, who knew how to write about the issue successfully at a time when it was relevant and important.
That's a distinction that's worth thinking about.
I just hope my future employers can make that distinction. Because there's a broader question about the future of gay media and gay anything, you know, in the coming years. And, you know, there's still newspapers like the Free Press, so I guess there's still minority newspapers out there. But it's hard, especially LGBT publications, LGBT business, specific businesses. They just don't exist like they used to. And whether or not they'll still be around in 5-10 years is an excellent question.
You mentioned sort of casually, and I guess that's appropriate given your age, that you were gay and therefore you were appropriate for the job we were talking about at the time, gay RVA. That's totally different from the experience you would have had if, say, you had lived 30 years earlier.
I can imagine.
Your timing was excellent.
Yeah. being gay, like the time?
No, your timing on the emergence of a website.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah.
It was perfect because here you were looking for a job, and here was a job that was clearly something that interested you.
Yeah.
You're still interested, right?
I mean,
you're still excited to go to work?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, this morning, like last week, we broke this story about this billboard that went up, this ex-gay therapy billboard that went up right near downtown Richmond. And we were the first ones to break it, and it just took off like wildfire. And a lot of other websites picked it up. All the local affiliates picked it up. And everybody stole my picture. But yeah, I mean, I get so much joy out of being able to be the first on some of these issues. And obviously I have special insight into some of these issues and access to some of these issues. But, you know, the General Assembly is coming up and I'll be down there. Maybe I might just send interns. And I mean, I think it's going to be a real bad year for LGBTQ issues. But, you know, maybe we'll at least get some. We'll probably have some proposed. I know of at least a couple that are getting proposed, a couple bills on both sides that are getting proposed. But that's one of the reasons I love RVA Mag is because I get to cover pretty much anything else with it. And yeah, just like we were saying earlier, you know, I love covering the General Assembly. I love, you know, the interesting thing about the internet is it really does level the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, I was at a city council meeting about a bike share program for the city, and I saw Graham Moomaw, who's the city council reporter for Times-Dispatch. And the moment I saw him, I was like, well, I guess I have to do this story tonight now. Because, I mean, it's my priority is to beat someone else, to beat everybody else to it. That is exciting. That gives me a great rush. And I did, by like 4 hours. But again, you know, as we were saying, you know, that lag in established media is just mind-bending to me. And I don't know how they think that that's a good idea and won't. Yeah, I mean, I understand it. The editorial process is still sacred, and I wish I had it. But, you know, the fact that I don't allows me to take steps that other publications can't and really be first in a lot of cases.
When did you know you were gay?
Summer between 8th and 9th grade.
Pacific?
Yeah, I was at a theater. I was at a theater camp. That's your sign. And I was this really beautiful girl walked in, and I looked her up and down, and I said, "Man, those are the cutest boots I've ever seen." I was like, "Man, you're super gay, Brad." that really was it. And I mean, I have no interest in cross-dressing or at least sober, no interest in that. But I do appreciate a good pair of boots on a woman, and on myself, for that matter. I've got a nice pair of boots I like. But yeah, that's your sign right there. And it went okay. Like, I told my parents about a year later. I had, like, a meltdown in high school, and it wasn't great. You know, I was in therapy, but overall, it wasn't that bad. Like, within a couple years, they were pretty adjusted to it. And I was a bratty kid. I was a terrible child. This is why I'm forever in debt to my parents. Forever. Because they put up with me and I put them through hell and they didn't deserve that. And yeah, I mean, my hero, if I can be half the man my father is, then I will be a good man. And my father is a great man.
That's a wonderful tribute.
It's the truth. He's always worked hard for us. He was a pharmacist. He owned his own pharmacy. And as with many business owners, and specifically pharmacy owners, the independent pharmacy business pretty much tanked in the mid-90s. And so he lost his business. And he worked for CVS for 15 years up until last year. And now he's actually working for another independent pharmacy which interestingly enough makes a ton of money off of HIV and AIDS drugs.
Wow.
It's actually a really interesting story. That I've got a friend who works up in D.C. for The Blade, and I keep telling him to talk to my dad about it because I think it's a really neat story. But yeah, he's working in a private and an independent pharmacy now. He's the happiest he's ever been. He's going to be home for Christmas this year, which never is the first time in 28 years that he'll be home for Christmas.
And will you?
Yeah. My mom would kill me. but yeah, my dad always worked 90 hours a week, and I am forever indebted to him because I squandered most of his money.
Right. Well, what's next? We've got just a few minutes left. What's next for you? What I mean, you're 29, and you're doing what you love. Apparently, your face lights up when you talk about breaking a story.
Yeah,
as it should.
Yeah.
But what do you envision down the road for Brad?
When is this airing?
Oh, we're recording it on December 17th.
Okay.
As soon as it gets edited, it'll be up and running. So a couple of weeks.
I'll be at Gay RVA for a bit. And hoping to make some more impacts and be able to give as much as I can to the community into Richmond. But you know, it's a small town. I do a lot, and there's not a lot of opportunities here that I haven't already taken advantage of.
Do you see yourself staying in journalism?
Oh, yeah. Well, and if I don't get something better in a year, then I'm just going to go work at Capital One, which is incredibly depressing, but I have a friend who works for Capital One and just bought a house. So
there you are.
Buying a house sounds really nice. But I don't know. I would love to be able to keep doing this, but it's hard, man. I am 29, and if I don't figure something out soon.
Oh, you've only got, what, 35, 40 working years left in you?
Yeah, but I got to buy a house at some point. I want to be burdened with home loans. So, I don't know. I mean, I would love to be able to do as much as I can and then take these skills to someplace that I can really add to the conversation.
Well, good for you. Brad, it's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for me as well.
It's great fun talking to you. Our guest has been Brad Cutner, who is the editor of both GayRVA.com and RVAMag.com, and those are their web addresses. You can find them easily on the web. And it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I think we learned something new about Richmond's gay community and the people who keep them informed. I'm Don Dale, and I hope you'll join us next time on the Virginia Voice for What's Your Story?
You've been listening to What's Your Story with Don Dale. If you know somebody with a story to tell, or if you'd like to tell your own story, telephone the Virginia Voice, 804-266-2477. And be sure to join us next time for What's Your Story? This is Charles Mink speaking, and this is the Virginia Voice.